Welcome aboard to 3 hours of live, local, and very snow-filled radio on WNTK 99.7 FM in Newport, New Hampshire, and WUVR 1490 AM 98.9 FM, Lubbock, in New Hampshire. I'm Greg Fennell, and this is Saturday Sports Talk, your weekly catch-up on what's happening around the Upper Valley in high school and college sports. The high schools are done for winter. We're waiting for spring, and boy, it sure doesn't look like spring outside right now, but there's plenty of Dartmouth activity going on, including men's hockey last night at the ECAC semifinals in Lake Placid. Wide open door for an opportunity to make the NCAA tournament, but it got slammed shut on big green skates in the third period against Cornell last night. We'll talk about that. We'll update you on what's happening with spring sports, which for all but one team have taken the weather into account this weekend. Men's lacrosse is still scheduled to play in this stuff at noon today against Penn. We'll talk to you about that. And also the mixed success for softball and baseball on the road in Ivy League play this weekend. And we'll think a little bit about the NCAA tournament. Of course, it's the big thing that's going on right now. University of Vermont men gave Duke a little bit of a battle but fell last night. But the big surprise, one of the biggest surprises of the day, involved the Ivy League champion Yale men's basketball team. We'll talk some more about that as we go on. 603-843-8623, the phone number. Tobin, whose trip to the studio might actually be shorter than mine to the Hilton Garden Inn here in Lebanon on Le Bombard Road in all this snow. He did make it into the studio. He's doing fine. He's pushing all the buttons and has the music all set up. So he's doing his thing, and I'm going to do mine for the next hour. After that, let's assume everything works the way it's supposed to. We will have Valley Buzz one way or the other after the 10 o'clock news. I believe Bob Hingston is scheduled to be in as a substitute. I believe Rich Parker is out for the next few weeks with the Dartmouth men's golf team for whom he coaches. Hopefully Rob Woodard will make it down from the hill. He will be here, I would guess. Somebody will probably be here at 10:06, or else we'll hear Tobin talking on the radio for 2 hours, I guess. I don't know, but we'll find out at 10:06. Valley Buzz will take you up till 12 o'clock to wrap up 3 hours of live and local here on NTK and UVR. We do this on every edition of Saturday Sports Talk. Not everything that happened in the world of sports on Friday night made it into Saturday morning's newspaper. We're going to read about it. All righty, crank up the tunage a little bit, too, if you could. That's Tobin. He's the voice in my head here on WNTK and WUVR. Anyway, men's hockey last night. Dartmouth, I don't think it's fair to say that anybody expected Reed Cashman and the Dartmouth Big Green to go as far as they did this year, all the way up to Lake Placid to Herb Brooks Arena in the Olympic City and compete for an ECAC championship and possibly an NCAA bid. It looked pretty good for a while last night. Semifinal action against Cornell, a team with which they'd had a pair of ties in the regular season of the ECAC schedule, each team winning a postgame shootout for the extra standings point. So you knew this one's going to be close, and it stayed that way with Dartmouth in control for much of it. But Cornell rallied from a 3-1 deficit with a 5-goal third period, two of them into an empty net, and the Big Red take a 6-3 victory over the Big Green in the second of the two semifinals in Lake Placid last night. Dartmouth had the lead, got the first goal of the game in the first period in the 15:02 mark. Sean Chisholm giving Dartmouth that edge that carried on into the second period. Big Red tied it up at 4:15, but Dartmouth got two goals from John Fusco, one at 5:25, another one on the power play at 12:18 of the second period, and Dartmouth went into the second period intermission with that two-goal lead. But Cornell came firing out of the locker room in the third period, got within a goal with Dalton Bancroft making it 3-2 just 43 seconds into the third period. And then two goals 50 seconds apart, one from Kyle Penny, one from Ryan Walsh, turned things on its head. Cornell had its first lead, was able to play defense enough, and got two empty net goals from Nick DeSantis in the final 3 minutes to make the game look a lot more lopsided than it truly was. Dartmouth finishes its year 13-10-9, had a 9-game unbeaten streak, and I believe an 8-game winning streak going into the contest last night. And that's all on Reed Cashman and a fairly young roster that was picked to finish, I believe, 11th in the preseason polls for the ECAC and ended up earning the fourth seed and going all the way to Lake Placid. So certainly there's a lot of credit due to the Dartmouth Big Green men's hockey team and a lot of promise for next year after the way things ended for this team, one of its best seasons in recent memory. Still, as they look back on last night, the Big Green's got to be shaking its head at a wide-open opportunity to break a 44-year drought of NCAA tournament appearances. Seventh-seeded St. Lawrence, the one team in the Final Four at Lake Placid with a losing record, knocked off top seed Quinnipiac last night 3-0 QBAC already assured of making it into the NCAA tournament. They've been high up in the rankings all year long, way ahead of everybody else in the ECAC, and they will hear their names called when the 16-team field is announced tomorrow night. But now St. Lawrence has an opportunity to really throw a monkey wrench into everything. Thomas Mazura got the opening goal for the Saints at 7:43 of the second period. Power play goal by Max Dorrington doubled the lead midway through the third, and Ty Niskins scored into an empty net with 1:52 to go for all the goals for the St. Lawrence Saints. So it'll be St. Lawrence and Cornell playing at 7:30 tonight in Lake Placid for the ECAC Championship. Whoever wins that game gets an automatic bid into the NCAA tournament. We'll talk a little bit more about that in just a second. One other bit of big green news, and good news as well, as the team got out to Lake Placid and had its dinner before the championships were held on Thursday night. Dartmouth found out that Reed Cashman was named the ECAC's Tim Taylor Coach of the Year, and forward C.J. Foley, rather, first-year defenseman, my mistake, named the Bitcoin Rookie of the Year. First time since 2008-09 that Dartmouth had a major award winner, and the first time since 5-6 in which they had two in the same season. So congratulations to them for their success. Boston College, Boston University have been flip-flopping between 1 and 2 atop all the NCAA rankings all year. They're going to play for the Hockey East Championship tonight in Boston. BC blowing up UMass. You could say they UMashed them 8-1, scored the last 8 goals of the contest at TD Garden last night. Sophomore forward Cutter Gauthier and freshman forward Gabe Perot each had 2 goals and 2 assists in the rout. BU did its job, topping Maine 4-1. Ryan Green, sophomore forward, had 2 goals, and Macklin Celebrini, whose name may well lead everybody at the NHL draft a little bit later this year, he had 3 assists in the Terriers' victory. So BCBU for Hockey East honors. But you know they're going to both go to the NCAAs anyway. When you look at the Division I RPI, when you look at the national polls, when you look at, most importantly, the pairwise rankings that you can see on uscollegehockey.com, they're both 1 or 2. So you know they're both going to make it. What's interesting about tonight's ECAC final, however, is it's going to have a lot of impact on whether or not the ECAC gets 2 or 3 teams into the national tournament. Right now, I'd say the betting line would be 2. Whoever wins tonight gets the conference championship. Quinnipiac will get an at-large bid. However, Cornell right now is ranked 13th in RPI. I believe they're 12th in the pairwise rankings, which is really what the NCAA Hockey Committee uses to fill out the 16-team field once the automatic championships are all set out. So Cornell could use a win tonight. If they don't get the victory over St. Lawrence, they're going to be biting their nails for a while to figure out if they're going to actually get in. I think they may not if they lose this game tonight. St. Lawrence, it's simple. Win, you're in. Lose, you're done, because they have a losing record. They're not going to show up on any polls so far, so should be fun. NHL last night, Washington Capitals won a wild 7-6 shootout win over Carolina, a game in which the Hurricane Sebastian Aho and the Capitals' Sonny Milano both had hat tricks in Washington. Big win for the Caps, who are still in the wild card picture in the Eastern Conference somehow. Pittsburgh fading. They lose to Dallas 4-2. Looks like the Pens are going to miss the playoffs for the second straight year. I'm not upset. Colorado 6, Columbus 1, and Arizona beat Seattle 2-1. On that standings front, the two teams in the East with the wild card spots right now are Tampa Bay and Detroit. Tampa looks reasonably solid. Detroit fluttering a little bit because they're only a point up on Washington and 5 up on the Islanders, both of whom have 1 game in hand. Islanders, less of a chance. It's hard to make up a 5-game deficit with only 12, 13 games to play, but Washington very much in the picture. Not really expected after all the trading they did at the deadline. On the Western side, it looks pretty set. The Nashville and Las Vegas are going to be the 2 wild card teams. Vegas with a 4-point lead on St. Louis, 5 on Minnesota, and both those teams have 12 to 13 games left to go. Speaking of the Capitals, once again, Tom Wilson has gotten himself in trouble. 6-game suspension for a high-sticking violation against Toronto's Noah Gregor, third period of the Maple Leafs 7-3 win over Washington on Wednesday night. And if you watch it on video, it's worth every bit of the 6-game suspension. Wilson looks to seem to have rehabilitated his image from being a dopey thug into a reliable part of the Washington playoff charge. He's now going to miss half of those games going down the stretch, the announcement made just before last night's game in Washington. Well, a year ago, Yale's John Pulakidas and August Mahoney were stuck at home watching Ivy League champion Princeton work its way into the Sweet 16 of the NCAA tournament, thinking, this is something that we really want to enjoy. Well, They got a last bucket, last second win for the Ivy League championship and a 62-61 win over Brown to get into the tournament. And then last night, Yale rallied from 10 points down in the second half, and the 13th-seeded Bulldogs upset number 4-seed Auburn 78-76 in the first round of the NCAA tournament out in Spokane, Washington. Pulikidis was outstanding, 28 points for the Bulldogs. Samson Allerton had a key block and a wild scramble that had multiple shooting opportunities for Auburn in the last 6 seconds of regulation. So Yale moves on and tries to do what Princeton did, get to the Sweet 16, only the second win in the NCAA tournament in school history for the Bulldogs. University of Vermont, not as successful. They did a fantastic job of taking Kyle Filipowski out of the play. The big star for Duke last night had all of 3 points, didn't hit a field goal, was no factor offensively, but he did pull down 12 rebounds, had a few assists, and second half, the defense for Duke made the difference in a 64-47 win over the Catamounts in Brooklyn. So UVM season, the America East champions, all done at 28-7. As for other action in the NCAA tournament yesterday, no great surprises among the higher seeds. UConn and Purdue, both top seeds, won, as did Houston, and all by fairly substantial margins. Second seed Marquette, the three seed Baylor, they were victorious. Once you get to the fours and fives, though, that's when the fun really got started. Alabama was a narrow winner over College of Charleston, 109-96. Fifth-seeded San Diego State got past Alabama Birmingham, 69-65. Number five, Wisconsin, they're out. 12th-seeded James Madison took them out, 72-61. And the fifth-seeded St. Mary's of California, they're gone too. Grand Canyon upset them, 75-66. Sixth-seeded Clemson was a winner over New Mexico, 77-56. Colorado outraced Florida, 102-100. Northwestern a winner over Florida Atlantic, 77-65. Texas A&M over Nebraska, 98-83. And Utah State beat TCU, 88-72 in the other first-round games. Women's side, no great surprises among all the top seeds who are easy winners. But that Texas A&M-Nebraska beatdown, well, at least Nebraska got some revenge on the women's side. Texas A&M stole Nebraska's AD earlier in the week. Nebraska women advanced with a 61-59 win over Texas A&M last night. Also, last collegiate game, I believe, for Windsor High School graduate Olivia Rockwood playing for the University of Maine. They were eliminated at Ohio State 80-57, although Rockwood did have 15 points in 35 minutes. Don't know if she has another year eligible from COVID or not, but we'll see in the coming days if anything occurs along those lines. But congratulations to her and the Black Bears. Jaylen Brown, 33 points. Boston Celtics rolled in Detroit last night to their eighth straight win, 129-102. They'll be in Chicago tonight to continue their dominant play in the Eastern Conference. NBA last night, Oklahoma City beat Toronto, 123-103. Memphis, 99, and San Antonio, 97. Minnesota, a 104-91 winner over Cleveland. Pelicans beat the Heat, 111-88, I should say. L.A. Clippers, 125, Portland 117, Pacers beat the Warriors 123-111, Sixers lose in Los Angeles to the Lakers 101-94. Boston Red Sox, a couple of notes from yesterday. Manager Alex Cora officially naming Garrett Whitlock and Tanner Houck the final two starters in the rotation for the Red Sox as they get ready for season opening action in Seattle. You'll have it live on WNTK on Thursday night with a 10 o'clock start. Righty pitcher Cooper Criswell and righty pitcher Zach Kelly option to AAA Worcester as part of those moves. New England Revolution scheduled to be at home this afternoon, taking on Chicago Fire in Foxborough, where the weather is looking to be rainy and very windy for a team that has played poorly through its first four Major League Soccer attempts. The Revolution yet to win in the league. Valspar Championship just wrapping up second round play. The Innisbrook Resort down in Florida. Looks like Keegan Bradley, Woodstock native, is going to miss the cut by one stroke. Had nine players out on the course to complete their second rounds this morning. And NASCAR action is going to be in Austin at the Circuit of the Americas road race, Echo Park Automotive Grand Prix, scheduled for tomorrow afternoon. And you are up to speed on what's happening out there in the snow here in the Upper Valley. I'll read about it on Saturday Sports Talk and WNTK. When we get back, we'll have a post-mortem on Dartmouth men's hockey. They went a lot further this year than I think anybody expected. So plaudits to the Big Green. We'll talk about last night and the season in general and the future. Coming up next, I'm Greg Fennell, and this is Saturday Sports Talk on WNTK and WUER.
Yeah.
9:24 here on Saturday Sports Talk on a very snowy Saturday. I think I crapped out about midnight last night. Looked out the window, and there was no snow whatsoever, which is no great surprise. The National Weather Service weather warning didn't start until 2 a.m., so to wake up and see a couple of inches on the driveway was no great surprise. You know, when I got up at 6:30 to get ready to come on over here to the Hilton Garden Inn, I'm Greg Fennell. This is Saturday Sports Talk on WNTK WUVR. Here at the meeting room of the Hilton Garden Inn, as we are on every Saturday morning, talking about what's happening in the Upper Valley for high school and college sports. Really, the only thing going on of substance, men's hockey, and that's a little longer than I think anybody expected. I believe we dug this up last week that, out of curiosity, Dartmouth, I think, was selected to finish 11th in the preseason ECAC poll, which I think is largely media members. Back in the day when everybody had media coverage in the league, they had a couple of people per team. I used to do this when I covered Dartmouth many years ago, who just offered their opinions on where they thought things were going to go. No real scientific background to any of it, and I think a lot of us just looked at last year's final standings and repeated them for the preseason preview, maybe moved a few teams up and down here and there. Certain things in the league are pretty much rock-solid guarantee. Quinnipiac's going to be at the top. Cornell's going to be up there. Colgate's probably going to be up there. You would expect Harvard. Beyond that, it's a crapshoot, and I think that bears fruit when you start looking at how things ended up in the regular season. And the biggest surprise, and the one that I believe has received adequate reward, is what Reed Cashman and the Dartmouth Big Green did to close out their season and go as far as they did. It wasn't looking that great once the new year got started. Dartmouth was still not really competitive against the good teams out there. I think back to the Ledyard Classic tournament at the end of December. The Big Green shut out Lake Superior State, which I think is what they should have done, but they went up against a nationally ranked Maine team that kind of ran them over in the second period, and you could see there was a difference between this young Big Green team and the higher-end teams in the NCAA, particularly the ranked teams in Hockey East. But not long after that, the Big Green found its form, and then over the end of the regular season and the start of the postseason tournament, they had a 6-game win streak and a 9-game unbeaten streak. 7-0-2, the two ties going to shootouts, Harvard won one, Dartmouth won the other against St. Lawrence. Carried that into the ECAC tournament to extend that winning streak with a sweep of Union last weekend, and then went off to Lake Placid, which I don't think anybody expected. I think it was a very good matchup for them. Although Cornell came into the game last night up at Herb Brooks Arena, ranked 14th in the country and looking to probably polish its resume a little bit more in order to get an at-large bid if it came down to that. I think Dartmouth had to go into that game knowing they had a good opportunity there. They historically play the Big Green, Big Red well. I mean, Cornell, through the Mike Schaefer years, were always a team of national stature. Always played the defensive end of the game very, very well, and that set up their runs of success of perpetual ECAC either championships, tournament championships, at-large bids, regular appearances in the NCAA tournament. Dartmouth has never been able to get over that hump in all the years that I've been here. Now, back in the early 2000s, once you start getting to 04, 05, 06, 07, when guys like future NHLers Ben Lovejoy, Lee Stempniak, Tanner Glass, Hugh Jessamine, Grant Lewis, Nick Johnson, bunches and bunches of guys who gave Dartmouth high-end talent and deep levels of it to get a share of a regular season ECAC championship. Those teams were better, I think, than what Dartmouth puts on the ice now, but even they couldn't get over the hump. They'd get to Albany for the semifinals or Lake Placid if it was held up there, and that's where things would fall to pieces. I remember one time they took on Harvard in Albany in a semifinal, ended up losing 10-1. That's how bad it got sometimes. But those teams were expected to compete for the NCAA tournament. This one for Dartmouth was not, but it started to become something you could talk about when they got up to Lake Placid last night. But unfortunately, it did not work out for the Big Green. They dropped a 6-3 decision to the Big Red in a game that was closer, much, much closer than that final score would indicate. Cornell scored 5 goals in the third period to rally from a 3-1 deficit, but 2 of those goals came into an empty net. What did make a difference for Cornell last night was a third period burst of two goals that turned a 3-2 deficit into a 4-3 lead. I think that might be where experience comes into play. Dartmouth had a 3-1 lead. Sean Chisholm scored in the first period. Dartmouth carried that 1-0 lead into the intermission. Some guy with a name I can't pronounce and I'm not going to try to pronounce tied it for Cornell early in the second, but Dartmouth got two goals, one from John Fusco a minute and 10 seconds after Cornell tied the game, another one from Fusco on the power play, 12-18 of the second period. So Dartmouth looking pretty good at that second intermission with a 3-1 lead. Any coach will tell you they don't want to give up goals in the first minute or the last minute of any given period because that can either really power up the opposition or can really deflate your roster. And unfortunately, Dartmouth did that to open up the third period. On a power play, Dalton Brancroft scored at 43 seconds. That cut the deficit to 3-2, and I think that changed the whole momentum of the game last night up in Lake Placid. And then just before the midpoint of the period, Kyle Penny and Ryan Walsh scored in a span of 50 seconds for Cornell. That turned that 3-2 deficit into a 4-3 lead. Dartmouth had to chase the game, pull goaltender in the last 3 minutes or so, Nick DeSantis scoring twice into an empty net to turn what was a tighter contest into what looked like something of a rout, even though it was anything but that. So Cornell gets the win. 20th win of the season for the Big Red. Congrats to them. Again, getting a win against a surging Dartmouth team that has played so well over the past 2 months should help Cornell a little bit as they go into that final tonight. And as I said during Read About It, I would not be surprised if some members of the Big Green looked at what happened in the early game at Lake Placid and thought, man, we just let an opportunity get away from us. St. Lawrence, with the upset of the tournament, beating Quinnipiac in the other semifinal 3-0 in Lake Placid last night. Goals from Thomas Mazzura, Max Dorrington, and Ty Nakins. The latter one into an empty net. Quinnipiac didn't need to win this tournament. If they did, they probably would have set up a situation where the ECAC would have only gotten one bid into the NCAA tournament because nobody else really has the resume to get in on RPI or in the pairwise rankings. Cornell, maybe, but they'd be sitting around waiting for everything else to happen, for the Hockey East to get done, for NCHC to get done, Big Ten, out west. You know, there's, I think, six or seven conferences that have automatic bids now, so they'd have to sit there and wait and hope that it would work in their favor. They've got a resume. I think they may get in, but they'll guarantee it with a win tonight. Cornell and St. Lawrence playing for that ECAC championship at 7:30. Winner gets the automatic bid. Quinnipiac is going to go in as an at-large team. Ken Schott, the fine union writer from Schenectady Gazette, who's very tied into ECAC hockey, surmising online last night that Quinnipiac will probably get a third seed as they go to whatever regional they end up going to. But this is winner go home for St. Lawrence. They're not going to get in with an at-large bid. Cornell might, but losing to a team with a sub-500 record for a league championship, it's not going to burnish the resume very well as they take a peek at the pairwise and at the rating percentage index. Bear with me a second. I'm going to dig up that pairwise on uscollegehockey.com. That is, while not exactly what the NCAA hockey committee looks at when it determines exactly who's going to make a tournament field, it very closely approximates it. For many years, USCHO had a writer named Jason Moy who knew this stuff better, and I contributed to USCHO many years ago when I was covering Dartmouth. He could predict the NCAA tournament field to the last team. You know, 16 teams, it's a little bit easier than trying to do a 68-team men's basketball or women's basketball tournament. But by and large, he was spot on. So you would know who was likely to go in. Right now, BC, BU are going to play for the Hockey East title tonight, and that's going to be fun to watch. I'm going to put that on the TV tonight. They're 1 and 2. They're going to be top seeds wherever they go. Denver, Michigan State, North Dakota make it into the top five. Maine is actually sharing top five in the pairwise right now with North Dakota. So even though they got knocked out by BU last night in the Hockey East semifinals, Maine's going to go. Minnesota, Wisconsin, with Quinnipiac, Michigan, they're all top 10. Omaha's tied for 10th with Michigan right now. Cornell is 12th on the RPI. UMass, which got throttled by BC, is tied for 14th. Providence in the mix, St. Cloud in the mix. New Hampshire at 18th, I don't think it's going to happen because they've got enough 16, you know, top 16 ahead of them. So UNH knocked out early in the Hockey East process, not going to go. And Dartmouth was in the same boat as St. Lawrence. They needed to win all the way through the ECAC tournament, win, you know, get to tonight's game and win in order to make the NCAA field for the first time in 44 years. So I think you got to really pat Reed Cashman on the back. You got to pat Dartmouth administration on the back. I don't know if it was Mike Herity who did it or if his predecessor Harry Sheehy did it, but Reed got a 4-year contract extension a couple of years ago. He took over for Bob Gaudette just around the time the pandemic hit, lost his entire first season, eventually was able to get Dartmouth men's hockey going in his second season here, and clearly somebody saw progress, even though it may not necessarily have been reflected in win-loss records. They saw something, and clearly their vision has paid out for a Dartmouth team that finishes 13-10-9, had that 9-game unbeaten streak, knocked off by Cornell in the semifinals last night. Things are looking up for Dartmouth men's hockey for the first time in a little while, and they deserve all the credit that they have received for this. Men's hockey, by the way, if you didn't catch it earlier this week, Reed Cashman named the Coach of the Year, and freshman defenseman C.J. Foley, Rookie of the Year. So, got a young coach who's doing well, got some young athletes doing well. Dartmouth men's hockey, I think, is going to be something to watch in the immediate future. You look outside your window right now, it says anything but the first couple of days of spring. But spring sports are going on, for the most part, yielding to the weather, but not for everybody. We'll tell you more in a sec. I'm Greg Fennell. This is Saturday Sports Talk at WNTK and WUVR. .39 and a half here on Saturday Sports Talk with your mandatory Ramones. They weren't necessarily against the weather when that song was recorded back in the it was early 80s on Road to Ruin. But all in all, though, I think it probably suits most of what we're thinking about here when we look outside our windows today. Greg Fennell with you. This is Saturday Sports Talk on WNTK, WUVR, Tobin in the studio in Newport. 603-843-8623 if you'd like to commiserate with him on the status of roads or whatever the case may be. I hit the road from West Lebanon to come over here to the Hilton Garden Inn in Lebanon over by the Dartmouth Coach parking lot and depot about 7 o'clock this morning, and it didn't look like a whole lot of plowing had been done. This is a storm that arrived while we were all sleeping last night. The weather warning from the National Weather Service didn't go into effect officially until 2 a.m., and I went to sleep around midnight, so there was nothing on the yard when I got up, or went to bed, I should say, when I got up, maybe 2 inches on the driveway in the streets, and not a whole lot of activity plowing-wise. I did see some in downtown West Lebanon. I saw some on Interstate 89 going in the opposite direction, but with the road conditions the way they were, you couldn't go much faster than 30 or 35 miles an hour and still be safe. So hopefully things are starting to pick up a little bit. From where I sit, I can see in the distance the parking lot for Dartmouth Coach, and I saw some snow getting shot straight up into the air. So clearly somebody's got a snow thrower out there and is trying to clear things up. If you have transportation plans today, check with your source of transportation, like Dartmouth Coach, for instance. Advanced Transit, if you're trying to get around the general Upper Valley today, if you need to, or just bottom line, stay home if you can, because I think this storm is going to go on all day long. The weather warning, I think, continues until 6 a.m. tomorrow, so that tells me the weather is going to continue. It's not going to be hideously cold, which means this is going to be a wet and heavy storm at some point. There are reports in the forecasts for mixed precipitation, maybe some ice, so it's going to get really thick and really heavy and not a lot of fun. So you may want to wait for a while to go anywhere if you absolutely have to, or just don't. It's one of those things where you're probably better off just staying home, said the guy who went to the hotel to do his radio show. Yeah, I'm a bit of a hypocrite on that right now. 9:41 the time. There are things going on, though, for Dartmouth sports. Most of it's out of town, but here's the curiosity. Men's lacrosse has 13th-ranked Penn due for their Ivy League home opener at Scully Fahey Field today at noon. That game is a go. It is not going to be canceled. I'm going to be the PA address, public address announcer for that one. You'll see me. I'll be in all orange. Not because I'm a Princeton fan, because I've got a Dayglo orange ski parka that keeps me nice and warm on days like this. To Dartmouth's credit, they know hardly anybody's going to want to be out at this. I think you're going to probably have relatives be about the only ones coming out to this game. They have canceled ticket sales. Admission is free. So if anybody wants to try to get out there and support Dartmouth men's lacrosse today at noon, Scully Fahey Field, they can do so. I have to admit, though, that I am a little bit bamboozled by the decision to do this. I know that the general rule in college or professional sports is if the team can get in, if the opposition can get into town, the game will be played, regardless of what happens. And I know it probably has something to do with the way the scheduling works and the fact that playing a game like this is not an easy thing to cancel because you've got media support, you've got video people, audio people, you've got buildings and grounds, you've got security, maybe you've got concessions going on. There are so many elements that are part of this that you just can't say, we're not going to play, just because you got a couple of inches of snow on the ground. But this is going to be interesting to see from my standpoint. Now I know why nobody takes these lacrosse PA jobs, because you got to be outdoors the whole time.
Sports don't care about the weather.
Perhaps, yes, perhaps. My position is underneath a canopy of sorts at midfield on the field. I am with the clock operator and the shot clock operator, and it's just the three of us. It's the same situation I have for field hockey, just three of us under some sort of cover. So I'm hoping that it doesn't get very windy out there, but it's going to be amusing. The last home game they had 4 weeks ago to Holy Cross, it was 25 degrees, and Alberta had come to visit in a hefty way. It was blowing pretty steady. It was very cold. I don't think it's going to be as much cold today as it's just going to be inconvenient because of the snow coming down. But what I'm really curious to see, and Tobin, you're not old enough to remember this, but maybe you've read about it. Back in the early 80s, the New England Patriots had a football playoff game. This was back in the days of, I can't remember who quarterbacked. I don't think it was Jim Plunkett, but it was somewhere in that period where they had a playoff game in the snow. Nobody could score because the field conditions were so horrible. So last play of the game, Patriots call a timeout. They have the football in field goal position, and they called on a gentleman who was, I think, on work release from one of the local jails who did field work at what was then Schaefer Stadium, and he snowplowed a space on the field to make it possible for Patriots kicker John Smith to get adequate footing on it. And it was very controversial after it happened. There were people who said you shouldn't be able to take this kind of advantage. Hey, home field advantage. It's what the Patriots do. Smith hit the field goal. They won a 3-0 playoff game, and the rest was history. They didn't go off and win anything much beyond that, but it's still part of Patriots lore. I'm curious to see what Dartmouth Buildings and Grounds has available for staff to keep the field clear today. If it was a football game, you know what would be happening. The football's down to one side of the field, so the field-clearing guys are just walking across the yard lines, the fives and the tens, to make sure that everybody knows where the ball is or where the sideline is. Lacrosse, of course, is an up-and-down sport. There's not going to be any opportunity to do that. Are they going to build in extra breaks for this? I'm not sure. So I'm really kind of curious. And in that respect, it should be fun. But I make sure I'm bundled up for this. This is going to be crazy. Everything else, the irony of this is because everything else involving Dartmouth ball sports this weekend has adjusted because of the weather. Now, largely that is baseball softball because they were heading down to southern parts of New England where it was going to be an all-rain event. I've had the weather channel on my backup computer here all morning long and seeing the weather radar, and it looks like the rain-snow line right now is right at the Massachusetts border, the Vermont-New Hampshire-Massachusetts border an hour south of us. So right now everything is looking like a snow event here, but it's an all-rain event down south. And I remember I took a quick look at the Boston forecast yesterday, and where we have a winter weather advisory or winter storm advisory, they had a gale warning. So it tells you what kind of weather they were going to have, wet, windy, not conducive for baseball and softball. So Dartmouth baseball and softball with Ivy League openers on the road both switched their schedules. They did doubleheaders yesterday and are playing single games tomorrow, but obviously not doing anything today. And in both cases, both teams, baseball and softball, had splits yesterday. So, you know, reasonably good start to the day. Dartmouth men baseball, they're down at Yale for the weekend. They dropped the opener to the Bulldogs yesterday 6-2, but in the nightcap got a 2-1 win, which is really encouraging because Well, one, you remember what a disaster baseball was last year. 3-36 overall, nearly went winless in the league. I think they got three league wins right at the end of the season to keep it from being a complete loss. And they struggled out of the gate with some decent competition out, down south, like Sam Houston State, and so on and so forth. But we're getting throttled in a number of those games. But to come back and get a 2-1 win in the nightcap yesterday, very encouraging. Dartmouth with a tandem pitching performance. Devin Milberg starting, went four innings. Drew Conan came in, pitched two. And Jack Metzger got the win in relief to improve to 2-2 on the season. Pitched the final three innings, just allowed two hits, struck out one wild pitch, one hit batter. But that was it. Very effective in his stint. And the Big Green got their runs early, and the pitching made it work. Dartmouth had single runs on a RBI single in the first inning, and a wild pitch brought in a run in the second inning. Pitchers took care of it from there. Yale just got one run in the fifth and did not tie it. Offense wasn't really there. Dartmouth only had three hits in the nightcap, but by the by, did get the win. Elliot Krusen, Mac Zajac at first base, and Nathan Semelia had the hits for Dartmouth. So the Big Green split at Yale in baseball, losing 6-2, winning 2-1, and they'll take today off because of the weather, and will play the final game of the series tomorrow, and that will be a noon start down at George H.W. Bush 48 Field. Is that the older one? I don't know. I know the Bush family has ties to Yale University, but I don't recall what it is as far as baseball is concerned. Softball also, a nice start to the Ivy League season for Dartmouth. And I'm going to say it now. I'm going to set it before. I'm going to say it again. Watch Jensen Hall. She is going to be fun to see her in action pitching for the Big Green today. Similar situation. Dartmouth down at Harvard for the weekend. Dropped the opening game 8-4. They put Hall in the circle for game number two, and all the freshmen from Texas did was throw a complete game one hitter with 13 strikeouts. Dartmouth wins it by a count of 3-0. Two runs in the second inning, an unearned run on an RBI grounder from Ashley France, and a run on an error on a ball put into play by Alana Panu gave Dartmouth a 2-0 lead in the second inning. They got an insurance run in the seventh on a wild pitch that brought in see who came in. It was, I don't see who it is, but it looks like Layla Hennessy came in on the wild pitch that made it 3-0. But Hall was the difference, and a fantastic job for the freshman. 3-4 on the season. Faced 22 batters, strikeout 13 out of 22 batters, and 97 pitches. I know pitch counts don't mean much in softball because it's a safer throwing motion, but still, that is very efficient for baseball or softball. 97 pitches over 7 innings. So Dartmouth gets the split in softball as well. The other ball game that got put off, Dartmouth women's lacrosse was supposed to open today against Yale, home action. That game has been postponed because of the weather. Imagine that. They're going to take on number 16 Yale. That's going to be a 12 o'clock start at Scully Fahey tomorrow. By then, the storm will be done. Dartmouth will have cleared the field. They won't have to deal with the ongoing flakes we're going to have with men's lacrosse later on this afternoon. 9:50 the time. One more timeout and some thoughts on Yale men's basketball and the big upset of the NCAA tournament yesterday. Details next. This is Saturday Sports Talk at WNT. TK and WUVR. On Saturday Sports Talk. We're stretching our musical, menu, I guess you could say. Normally we play in the punk new wave 80s realm, which we did with most of the bump music today. Bangles covering Simon and Garfunkel with Hazy Shade of Winter, Ministry's Cold Life, Love Spit Love, the one-off side project for brothers Richard and Tim Butler, better known for the Psychedelic Furs, Change in the Weather, Ramones, They're Against Everything. That's our modern. That was our mandatory Ramones. I'm against it, even though weather didn't have anything to do with it. We're against this weather. Devo, Snowball, and here's the stretch. You're listening to, of course, Bay Area heavy metal legends Metallica with Trapped Under Ice off of there. I think it was their second release, Ride the Lightning, back in the mid-'80s. I was playing this in college radio on a heavy metal show, so we could say this was from the 80s, I think. I'm pretty sure I was doing that. So back in 85, I think, 84, something like that. So anyway, thank you, Tobin, for digging those up. 9:55 the time here on Saturday Sports Talk. I'm not a big NCAA basketball tournament fan. I'm a casual watcher. I enjoy the opening rounds. I like to see who pulls off the upsets. And I like to see teams from New England, and I like to see teams from the Ivy League. So I'll sometimes take some time and watch them. And when I saw the matchup for Yale and Auburn, I thought there was a golden opportunity here for the Ivy League to take down another major Power 5 program. Last year, Princeton won the Ivy League title, knocked off Arizona in the first round, made it all the way to the Sweet 16, which is a fantastic accomplishment for anybody from the Ivy League. All year long, when we gave you scores and read about it, what was happening in the Ivy League, you could see that this was going to be a three-horse race between Princeton, Cornell, and Yale, and all three of them easily made the Ivy tournament. Princeton and Cornell got knocked off in the opening round of play, Yale taking out Cornell, Princeton getting beaten by Brown. Brown nearly knocked them all off. They were the number four team, barely got into the tournament toward the end of the regular season. They had Yale on the ropes, and the Bulldogs managed to hit a buzzer beater to win the Ivy League championship last weekend, get into the NCAA tournament. And then last night they did what I think some people aren't terribly surprised that they did. They beat fourth-seeded Auburn in Spokane, Washington, 78-76, the final in that one. John Pulakidas, absolutely outstanding for the Bulldogs. Lefty shooter, can create his own offense. He can hit fadeaway three-pointers off the dribble. He did everything last night. Career-high 28 points. Samson Alatin came in as a backup. And a very badly needed backup when their top player, Danny Wolf, was taken out on fouls late in the contest. He had a late block, wild last 6 seconds. Auburn had two free throws with 6 seconds left thereabouts that could have tied the game, very likely would have gone to overtime, and Auburn would have won this game in overtime because Yale was losing some of its top players to foul outs. But first shot missed, second one missed, perhaps intentionally, ball bouncing around all over the place. Alatin had a nice block. A second block, I think, occurred. A third shot got off, was off target and contested, and finally the buzzer sounded, and Yale celebrated a 78-76 win last night. Very, very well earned for James Jones and the rest of the Yale men's basketball program. They're showing well for the Ivy League. I mean, Ivy League basketball did pretty well all the way around. Yale, the only team that made the NCAA tournament, but Princeton and Cornell, I think, were both selected for one of the other Alphabet Soup postseason tournaments, either the NIT or the WIB or whatever the hell they call it now. And on the women's side, both Princeton and Cornell selected for the NCAA, which was really nice. I would figure that only one of them got in. They were head and shoulders above everybody over the regular season. They collided in the postseason. Princeton swept Columbia in three games between the regular season and playoffs, but Columbia got the call. And although I believe both got knocked out in the first round, or at least one of them did, very nice to see them both get opportunities. So not a bad year for Ivy League men's basketball. It's some say it's an underrated league, and I think you're probably right in that regard, because when they play Power 5 teams, it's almost always on the road. But when they get to the NCAA, when they get to the big stage, they often show well. Yale will play San Diego State in the second round on Sunday out in Washington State, and I think I'm going to watch that. All right, that does it for Saturday Sports Talk. Thank you to Tobin for his work down in the studio. Bob Hingston, Rob Woodard are out having their breakfast right now. They'll be here in just a few minutes to do Valley Buzz after the weather and the news. Take you up till 12 to wrap up live and local here from the Hilton Garden Inn. You've been listening to Saturday Sports Talk, WNTK, WUVR. Have a great weekend, and I hope your snow thrower works.